Hello, my name is Jen. I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ, and I struggle with relationships and trust. Tonight, we get the privilege of talking even more about what we call here at Celebrate Recovery, a spiritual inventory. 2 weeks ago, we did a teaching, and we talked about how we set it up here, which is utilizing a chart, and it has five columns. And so tonight, I'm going to go through those five columns in a little bit more depth. And there's some great homework that we do in something called a step study for people who are new. It's on a different day or night of the week than this group. And it's an opportunity for guys to meet with guys and women to meet with women and do an in-depth look at why we got to this place, why we need recovery. And the really nice thing about this process is that you get to bond with these same people for anywhere from 6 to 9 months. It can be up to a year, but they usually don't last quite that long. We have 12 ladies in my group that we're doing right now, and we're just getting to writing our inventory, which is about our halfway mark. And I'm really, real excited to be a part of this teaching tonight just because we just finished doing these lessons. And so it's real fresh in my heart and in my mind right now. So what you have on your handout, if you didn't get a handout, there's some extras maybe in the back if you're looking for one, or there's empty ones on the chairs. We're just going to go through this handout. It's real simple, and what it's designed to do is just to help you generate thoughts and memories and your hurts, habits, and hang-ups that you put on the chart that we talked about 2 weeks ago. So the first one is, the first blank is involves your relationships with others. You know, as we do this work, we start to develop concepts about who we thought we were in our own minds and how we actually came across to those around us. And sometimes that involves our character. And one cool thing about our character is that it says there's three parts to a character: what we truly exhibit, what we think we have exhibited, and what we truly have as our character, because sometimes we mimic things, and so sometimes what we exhibit to begin with wasn't really truly our character. We were just trying to fit a mold, to feel like we fit in. I don't know how many of you kind of were little chameleons. I was a real good chameleon growing up, and so whatever group of people I was around, I would just kind of like mold into that group of people and pretended like I was that part of a person, or I was that person to meet that part. And so sometimes my character was really confusing because in one group I was one way, in another group I was in another way. And sometimes we carry that stuff over into our adult life. And so analyzing that can be really helpful. And when it comes to this chart, these questions on our relationships with others help you find out what you need to put in column one. And then a few questions later, we'll talk about how you can find things to put in the last column, which is your part. So there's just some real basic questions. Who has hurt you? Against whom are you holding a grudge? Against whom are you still seeking revenge? And are you jealous of anyone? Just simple questions. Real easy to answer, right? Yeah, they hit you right in the jugular vein right from the get-go. At least it feels like that to me. It's like, geez, you know, sheesh. They got to go deep right here from the start. But that's all right, because really, what good is it to stay surfacey? I think staying surfacey is what got us here. I don't know about you, but I was afraid to let people really know me. And likewise, I didn't really know how to get to know other people. And these types of things were what was in my way. So when I analyzed these types of questions, I was able to start bringing some healing and some release and some growth in these stunted areas of my life. I always refer to myself as a relational retard. I don't know how to do relationships very well. I certainly didn't growing up. And so these types of questions are good for me, because I really need to grow in the area of relationships with other people. So when you answer these questions, bam, column number one is, it just says the person. And so there you probably named several people right there. They can be in column number one. Don Henley has a song, it's called The Heart of the Matter, and it says, if you keep carrying around that anger, it's going to eat you up inside. And that's why we do this work, because if you're jealous of somebody, if you're seeking revenge, if you're holding a grudge, if you feel like somebody hurt you, they may or may not even care. It ain't bothering them, but it's sure hurting you. So getting these things out really help us to move on and release people in our lives who maybe we need to release. Conversely, there's a column at the end. It's called My Part. We got to own up to some stuff sometimes. It says, who have you hurt? You know, this could be intentional or unintentional. Sometimes we say and do things. I know I'm in this place a lot of times. I say and do things, and it comes across wrong. And it's a misunderstanding. And it's amazing how long and how deep misunderstandings can wind their way into relationships and cause dysfunction and division. And it wasn't even meant. It was not intentional. Sometimes our recovery work is simply just communicating and figuring out, oh, that's not what you meant. Oh, that's how I took it, though. And then you hug and move on because you didn't mean any harm. And truly, when it's sincere, people can move on. Sometimes, even as much as you didn't mean to hurt somebody, there was a real hurt, and then you do a little bit more work around that. Who have you been critical or gossiped about? Ooh. I kind of have a joke. Anybody that grew up in church, this joke's for you. If you didn't grow up in church, it may not quite be as funny. But the joke is this. Christians gossip all the time. We just say it's a prayer request. I've been guilty of that one. So, see, it's so easy to gossip. Dang it. Have you tried to justify your bad attitude by saying it was their fault? You know, that's really what drives something called a drama triangle. It's this great little concept. Imagine a triangle, and on each point, there's a different thing. There's a persecutor, there's a rescuer, and there's a victim. And two people can perpetuate around this triangle like all get out. Because you have one conversation or one sentence or one moment where somebody's yelling at somebody else. That's the persecutor. Well, the person who's getting yelled at, they feel like the victim. Ooh, why are you yelling at me? It's not my fault. And then somehow, it's so hard to even figure out how this happens, but eventually, like in almost a moment's time, then now somebody's rescuing the other person. So like the persecutor persecuted, the victim's all sad about it, and then the persecutor's like, oh shoot, I'm sorry, and this starts to rescue them. And then you just like spin around on this crazy drama. It's called the drama triangle, and it's full of drama. Chaos, disruption, bitterness, disappointment, frustration, that all goes around in this drama triangle. It's amazing how it works. I myself am a professional at this. I can be all three parts in the matter of the same conversation. It's amazing. It's truly amazing. Sheer talent up here tonight. But the bottom line is that it gets me nowhere. And I used to do this all the time when I was married to my addict. And it would always be, well, you. Oh, yeah, well, you. Oh, yeah, well, you. And it just would amp up and amp up and amp up. And all we were doing was just throwing mud at each other around the drama triangle. And then we'd be all sad about it. Oh, I'm sorry. And then we're both victims. And, you know, and it was really lame. It did nothing for our relationship. It was amazing when I started recovery. There's one simple thing that helps you stop the drama triangle. Learn to respond instead of react. The difference is reacting is, well, you! Or the quick-witted, because I can be pretty witty too. The little comments like, you know, jabbing each other, little sarcastic remarks, whatever. That's the drama triangle thing. That's reacting. Responding is practicing serenity, which is calmness, composure, peace of mind, quietness, Oh, man, I had to learn to keep my mouth shut. It was so excruciating. I like to talk, and I would have to keep my mouth shut. He'd give me a jab, and I'd just have to stay quiet. It was so frustrating at first, but I learned that that got me off the drama triangle. Sometimes just keeping your mouth shut really can go a long ways. I love text messaging. It's become one of, well, it's not my most favorite mode of conversation because it's really not conversation. But when somebody text messages me, I like it because I get a moment to figure out how I want to respond. There's been lots of text messages where I've typed it and I'd be like, nope, delete, 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 delete. Let's try this one over again. And I can sometimes write and delete a few times before I get a good response because I'm trying to respond and not react. So text messages are lovely for that. Emails work kind of the same way. So the whole concept is that we want to work on our relationships with each other. This inventory process helps us do this. This is just one way that we start to dig in and dive into what it is that we're carrying around with us. Hosea 4:4 says that don't point your finger at someone else and try to pass the blame. It's the thing that I was told as a little kid. When you point your finger, there's three pointing back at you, which means you're probably more at blame than the person you're pointing your finger at. Okay, whatever. Okay, so the next blank is your priorities in life. On our chart, this can help us find the cause. Sometimes we have experienced stuff in our childhood that later on in our adult life, as we work our recovery program, we realize, oh my gosh, this goes all the way back to my childhood. I told myself I was never going to be like my parents, right? Don't you say that? And here I am, acting just like my parents. Or similar situations like that. You may find that you keep ending up in relationships that just keep recycling around and recycling around the same types of people, the same types of relationships, and you wonder, oh my gosh, this is madness. I chose this person because they were opposite of my father, and look, they're just like my father. Ah! How does this happen? Or whatever the case may be. Some of you might be able to relate to this. Well, sometimes it seems odd, but our priorities in life can lead us into the direction of being put in these relationships or put in these scenarios because it's linked to our priorities. Let me go through a couple of questions. Maybe it'll help. After making the decision to turn your life and will over to Christ's care and control, which is principle number 3, in what areas of your life are you still not putting God first? There's something called head knowledge, and there's something called heart knowledge. And head knowledge is like, oh yeah, I should probably not do that. And then you do it anyway. Oops, I should probably not do that. And then you do it again. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm not supposed to do that. That's head knowledge. Heart knowledge is you do it and you're like, oh, man, oh, I am so sorry. And there's something in you that just tugs at you and you don't do it again. And that's when that head knowledge became heart knowledge and it changes your behavior. But it seems like a long ways between your head and your heart. It's for some reason, feels to me like a lot of work to get something that I cognitively know as like, you know, oh, pick me, I know the right answer. You know, I always wanted to be the kid with the right answer in school. And, you know, that meant a lot to me because it made me feel important. But there's things that we just keep doing. Paul talks about this in Romans 7. He says, why do I do what I don't want to do? And what I hate, that's what I end up doing. Well, because that's our human nature. And so we have to figure out, in our recovery work, A, what are we doing? Where are our priorities? Why are we choosing the things that we're choosing in life? And if those things are getting us into trouble, if they're leading us down a path that's hurtful, if we're into habits that are destructive to us, if we're just doing one hang up after another, then maybe we should examine our priorities and how we're thinking through this stuff. Maybe we know it in our head, but it hasn't reached our heart yet. What in your past is interfering with doing God's will today? What are your ambitions, your pleasures? Are those things still in the way of you being able to practice this recovery, practice healthy relationships, practice sobriety. I read a long time ago in a book called The Bondage Breaker. Great book. There was a lot in it, but this one line just hit me like a ton of bricks. And this guy's in talking to a pastor, and he's like, gosh, you know, I keep trying to stop this habit, and you know, I'll do good for a while, and then it just comes back, and I try to stop it again. Anyway, he goes through this scenario about trying to break this habit. And the pastor looks at him and goes, you can't quit because you like it. And I was like, oh, that's so profound. No wonder I keep doing it. I like it. Well, then I haven't really gotten recovery in that part of my life yet, have I? If I like it more than being healthy, then that's an area of my life that maybe I still need to do some work in. Handy that we have this process called the spiritual inventory. I can do that work. Sometimes the decisions we make are based on our priorities, but they put us in harm's way. Sometimes it's not for lack of trying, right? I know I've put forth a lot of effort in my life. I know that I have screwed up for a long time. And it seems like I work on an area, and then, oops, there's another area, and then I work on another area, and ooh, there's another area, and oops, there's that one again. I got to go back over here. And it's not for lack of trying. I've been at recovery here for 8 years and 2 years in Al-Anon prior to being here. So for a decade, I've been working solidly on recovery. And then before that, I was doing some work. It just wasn't recovery work. And so it hasn't been for my lack of trying. Sometimes I only know what I know. And I have to do a process of growing. So time is in your favor when it comes to recovery work. Because the longer you do this, the more you learn. And the more you learn, the more you grow. And the more you grow, the easier it becomes. And the easier it becomes, the easier it is for you to then invest in other people's lives. And then you get to grow some more. It's like a whole new layer of growth. Oh, you know. And so it's this whole cyclical thing of like, okay, well, I've worked and I discovered some stuff. And then you share it with somebody else and then they share back. And it's this whole mutual thing. And it's like, wow, mutual stuff. They don't want anything from me? It's not, you know, there's not ulterior motives. This is crazy. You know, healthy relationships can be kind of fun, actually. Better than the unhealthy ones I've been in. More rewarding, for sure. Sure, there's a lot of work that is involved, but definitely more rewarding. Anyway, so sometimes we are doing things and we just continue to put ourselves back into that spot because we haven't figured out how to shift our priorities. Sometimes that's a key. Our healing and successful amends can come from simply readjusting our priorities. Because when we do that, it results in a change of our actions. And when we do that, the problems sometimes just go away. Because there's this crazy thing where we offend, and then we re-offend, and we re-offend, and then we re-offend, you know, and it just kind of goes around and around as we're trying to work something out, and we haven't quite figured it out yet. And so we keep kind of stumbling along, messing up. And so that shift of our priorities sometimes is what it takes to get us off that track. Matthew 12:34b says, for the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. Luke 6:45 says, a good man brings out good from the good stored up in his heart. And an evil man brings evil things from the evil stored up in his heart. For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. So, more priorities. How about your job, your friendships, your personal goals? What about your priority with God? Is he in there? This is a spiritual inventory, so at some point, we probably should introduce God into this whole mix. That sometimes is the key for us to be able to shift our priorities. I see myself as I see myself. I can't see myself any other way. It's kind of basic logic. The only way I can see myself any different is if I take on somebody else's perspective. The best perspective to take on is God's. How does God see me? That, my friend, will be a life changer. But you won't know how God sees you if you don't study his word, if you don't pray, if you don't have conversations with people about God and what he believes and what he says about you. That's the best perspective to get, is God's. Selfishness turns life into a burden. Unselfishness turns burdens into life. When we do this work, we're able to get down a path where, like I said, we start getting in relationships with people. We start understanding mutual healthy relationships. What we thought was the shame of our existence becomes somehow, miraculously, this blessing that we're able to share and have compassion with other people about because we understand it. We've been there ourselves. It's the coolest thing. Recovery work is a redemptive work. What we carried around is, and what we drug behind us probably as this like whole like, oh, this is so awful. This is, I don't, shush, you know, don't look here, don't look here, don't see this. You know, the thing that we wanted to hide about ourselves. Well, then all of a sudden, like Paul says again, we can boast about our weaknesses because through Christ, we get healing and we get victory in our weaknesses. So then we're no longer ashamed. So this kind of goes along with when you're selfish, who did your priorities affect? What was good about your priorities and what was wrong about them? So those are all things that you can kind of work through and think about and digest on where your priorities have got you in life. The third blank is your attitude. In the chart, there's column number 3. It's the effect and the feelings that are associated with the cause that we just talked about. And that's directly related to our attitudes. Do you always try to have an attitude of gratitude, or do you find yourself always complaining about your circumstances? Conversely, in what areas of your life are you ungrateful for? Well, there's a strange thing. If we can't be grateful for the bad things in our lives that we have received, like I was saying, the thing that I thought was my shame that I was trying to hide from people, when I do recovery work, that's no longer shameful because I have compassion towards others. But if you're not at that place yet, if you're not ready to be grateful for the bad things that have happened in your life, then you certainly can be grateful for the things that you have escaped. For some people, that's death. Some of you have escaped death only by the grace of God. Some people have escaped losing their job. Some people have escaped losing relationships, maybe a marriage, maybe the relationship with your kids. Maybe you have been able so far to escape that. I could go on, but I think you understand. There are things that we have escaped only by the grace of God. And we certainly can be grateful for that. And if you're always looking for something to be grateful for, then we can always go to 1 Corinthians 15:57. It says, but thanks be to God, he gives us victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. When we work this program, we start to get victory under our belt, and we realize that, oh my gosh, life can be better, and life will be better. Just keep coming back. And then we have some wind in our sails because we're experiencing the victory we have through Jesus Christ. We certainly can be grateful for that. And then I always throw in, I'm grateful because I'd rather be in heaven than here anyway. So surely grateful for that one. My last card in my hand. The next question is, have you gotten angry and easily blown up at people? Have you been sarcastic? Which, by the way, the Latin base for sarcastic is the tearing of flesh with words. When I heard that, I was like, ooh, that's not so nice. I should probably stop doing that. Because I used to be really sarcastic. I was like, ooh, that's really mean, actually. So I try not to be as sarcastic. What in your past is still causing you fear or anxiety? These questions can help you also in column number 5, because these are things that you've done in response to the relationships you've been in. And like Daniel said a couple weeks ago, hurt people hurt people. So sometimes we had an initial hurt. Maybe it wasn't our fault. And by the way, I want to remind you that, again, any abuse that you suffer, especially as a kid, is never, ever your fault. If you have somebody on your chart and that damage or that cause was abuse, and you had all these feelings and damage associated with that, you get to your part, it's nothing. No part. Nobody ever deserves to be abused. Being in an environment of abuse, I have made choices that I'm responsible for. Sometimes we abuse back. Sometimes we become an ultimate victim, and then we are this black hole of a void that we suck everything into, and we have to own responsibility for that. But that initial thing is not our part. I just want that to be clear. The last blank is your integrity. That would be the damage that's on our chart, column number 4. It's just 3 basic things. There's social damage, there's security damage, and then there's sexual or intimacy or trust. That is the 3 basic needs that we are usually wounded in. And then obviously that could be explained in other ways. But our integrity has a lot to do with how we walk through those areas that we've been damaged in. So in what past dealings were you dishonest? That can be a social or a security damage. An honest man alters his ideas to fit the truth. A dishonest man alters the truth to fit his ideas. And that can be a difference. Have you stolen things? Again, that could be a social or a security thing. Maybe you felt like you had to steal as a source of your security. Maybe you stole because the people around you stole. That would be a social reason. Our needs are very compelling and can drive us to justify many things because we say in our heads, but I need this. And in all honesty, I've been in that place in my life where I've done things because I genuinely was convinced I needed it. And maybe I did, but the way I was going about meeting that need was unhealthy. The needs are usually always legitimate. How we're trying to meet the needs is what gets us in trouble. Have you exaggerated to make yourself look better? Yeah. Who doesn't? That's also a social or a security thing. You know, we're insecure, so we try to make ourselves look better than we believe we are. In what areas of your past have you used false humility? Well, that can be a security thing as well. Have you lived one way in front of your Christian friends and another way in front of your coworkers or your family or any other group of folks that you hang out with? Well, that could be all of them, social, sexual, or security. And so hopefully by talking through this with you a little bit more, you kind of understand that there's a whole lot that you can ponder and think about when it comes to writing out your spiritual inventory. And we do this because James 5:16 says that confess your sins to each other and pray for each other. Why? So that you can be healed, which I find to be very interesting wording. God says this. He says that we're healed not by confessing to him, but by confessing to each other. And I think God says that because he's not the one that offended us. People are the ones that offended us. People are the ones who hurt us. And how clever is God to tell us that if the hurt came through people, then so does the healing. I find that to be very clever. Because God knows that we're made for relationships. Ultimately, our relationship with him, but also our relationships with each other. And we're so bad with each other. Kids are so mean. I hated junior high. I don't know about you, but everybody's so daggum mean. And then you get into these environments as an adult and people are cheating each other and, you know, trying to one up you, and you get these business deals that go bad and because people aren't honest. And I mean, it's all around us. Wherever we look, we see all these people hurting each other, taking advantage of each other. But God created us for relationships. And if we deprive ourselves of getting healing through relationships, we're never going to quite get that full healing. Because that's the way God designed it. And God was clever enough to tell us the way to get that healing. It's through each other. And that's why we do a spiritual inventory. And that's why we share it with somebody we trust when we're all done. And it's amazing the healing that you can get when you do this process. And instead of rejection, you get acceptance. Instead of a put down, you get a great job. You get an affirmation. Instead of a scary, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you did that, you get a, hey man, I've been there before, I understand. And that's amazing. That's amazing to be able to go through. Don't deprive yourself of that chance. This work is hard, but it's so worth it. I pray that you'll do it someday. Thanks.